Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I'm going to start this next phase of our investigation, our discovery into what it means to be present to ourselves, to live in a true and living now, with a key lesson. And when I scratched this out this morning, I realized that when I read it to you, that there's going to be a certain reaction to a part of it. And of course, the reaction itself is the proof in the pudding. But we may not be able to see that. So we're going to examine that reaction. We're going to examine the idea a little bit before we dive into the full body of the material. So here's the key lesson. When our inherent wish for freedom meets the conditioned fear of a life of servitude, we become as slaves to the cultural ideas of what it means to be free. And read it again. When our inherent wish for freedom meets the conditioned fear of a life of servitude, we become as slaves to the cultural ideas of what it means to be free. First, I will give you what is a fundamental principle of freedom. And it is this. Whatever it is in life that we can understand will serve us. Whatever it is in life that we do not understand, we are going to serve. This is a basic and fundamental principle, and you must take the time on your own to examine the truth of it. But a hint, an idea, is that whatever I have come to understand means that I have in some way or another learned what it means to participate with the principle. When I didn't understand math, I served it in fear. How many of you remember serving math in fear in school? Maybe it wasn't math, but it was something. And you serve it because your reaction to the thing, the person, the principle, causes you to become subservient to it. But as you gain understanding of the math, of the science, of the relationship, of life itself, that growing understanding places you in a different relationship with what you understand, so that you're no longer reacting to its presence, but you're relating through it. And the possibility of relating to life, being in relationship with it, is where freedom lies, because the next principle of freedom is this. We are going to serve something. There is a lie as big as Texas. And that lie is that there is a freedom that you can have where you are the kingpin, where you are the pinnacle, where you are the top of the top, the cream of the cream, and everything you do is of absolute dominance. This is a lie. There is no such freedom as that. It does not exist. Now, I'm going to prove it to you, and you'll see that what I've said is not a negative thing at all, because people hear something like, well, wait a minute, man, what am I doing? I'm trying to get all my ducks lined up. I'm trying to get $1 zillion by the time I'm 50. I'm trying to, you know, master all the relationships on the planet. This is, what am I doing if I'm not going to be free when I get there? So let's look at it a little bit. I want to add here at this point that when we talk about freedom, we have to recognize that with freedom, all things are good. Without freedom, we have nothing. and the evidence is in our lives. If we look at ourselves, there are days in which, and this is the point of it, in scale, where our thoughts and feelings aren't troubling us. The people around us are in relative compliance. The stars, if you will, are lined up so that there's not conflict interiorly. And we have a relative freedom by which, because of the interior invisible life being in a relative set of relationships that aren't conflicted, we feel pretty darn good. And that feeling of goodness is in itself connected to what? The interior absence of conflict. So the freedom that we're experiencing gives us what we call a good day. It isn't the day that's good, it's the freedom we have that's good. On the other hand, there are days when the antithesis happens, where nobody is compliant. Our thoughts and feelings are running onto the reefs of our own imagination. The stars are in conflict. Mercury's in retrograde or whatever it is that's going on. And you realize that I'm a slave. I hate my life today. Why do I have to live like this? And again, it's an interior condition that is making us see our exterior life as one in which we are in a constant sense of being a slave to the conditions around us. And the fact of the matter is that this kind of freedom is a cultural freedom. And we're going to go slow here. And by cultural freedom, I mean that our sense of self and the freedom that we derive from it is itself a derivative of the world around us. People find freedom in the world by doing what the world says will make them free. Make a lot of dough, gain a lot of authority, become a political, social, or religious figure by which that gives you the position of power in the world you're in, and then very little will challenge you because you can isolate yourself from conditions that frighten you or that seem to threaten you. So we as human beings look at these cultural ideas as a path to freedom. Because if I can obtain things, then in obtaining things that I can identify with that give me the sense of being a powerful person, I myself find the freedom in that. Of course, the drawback is this. I must eventually become dependent upon those very conditions that were going to give me freedom. And if I'm dependent upon conditions that grant me freedom, then I only have a conditional freedom. Because as soon as the conditions change, goes with it that sense of myself that derive freedom from those ideas. Which means that the freedom was a temporal, conditional freedom. And those are real freedoms to a degree. But I ask you to examine this yourself. If I am in fact one who then fears and struggles to control those conditions, am I the master of the conditions or are the conditions a master of me? And the answer is evident. The conditions master me because of my fear of losing them, by which I lose my sense of being a free human being. So that freedom, and we're not saying, you will never hear me say or denigrate the relative path of life by which a person first discovers what is accessible to them and what is not. How would I ever even be able to speak to you these ideas that I do? Not from books, but from life itself, about these kinds of freedom, if one didn't realize that freedom comes in shapes and colors, in sizes and qualities. And that the gradual discovery that freedom, true freedom, is not a condition of anything that human beings can create, then one starts to realize that there is a different order of freedom, a spiritual freedom. But here's why I said that all freedom involves servitude. Because when we find spiritual freedom, we find it through discovering a broader base of relationships, through and in which, by participating with them, we are granted a new order of freedom that is still something that is given to us, but rather than being conditional, as the worldly temporal freedoms are, this freedom that we're granted by what is spiritual is given to us because we agree to serve it. See, we try to find freedom by limiting. I don't want to be, and this is what I meant by cultural. We're raised with the idea, we read the books about classes and servitude, and the worst thing that can happen to you is to be someone who winds up serving something. Oh my God, you're a dead duck. You'll wind up in the street collecting garbage cans if you comply with serving people and serving situations. And there's an inherent fear that lives inside of us of the idea of being a servant. Because we're going to hire servants. We're not going to have them. And that's part of our culture. And it runs deep. I can actually feel some of you right now. It runs deep, this whole idea. I'm never going to serve anything. Well, let me tell you something. If you have that stiffness in your back, that you're never going to serve anything, you will never know God. You will never know freedom. You will never know freedom if you have that in you. There's only one way that we find freedom, and it's a difficult path. We're talking about it because there is something that lives inside of us that has been given to us at birth. We were born into a world that had defined freedom for us prior to our taking a body. And not knowing, being innocent in a manner of speaking, and then conditioned through that innocence, we're led to a host of ideas through which we relate to the world around us. And through that host of ideas that we relate to the world around us, we carve out of the world. And that's a good way of putting it because it's violent. We carve out of the world the freedoms that we're going to have. And may God have mercy on the man or the woman who stands in the way of what I have said is going to be my freedom. I'll come back and be nice to them after I get what I need in order to no longer serve anyone and anything. And it's built inside of us, this, and it's a dark nature. Not bad, dark, unenlightened, uneducated, unkind, because it has no true consciousness apart from a rather deep and natural part of animals. You know, you ever watch animals, wolf pack, you watch anything. Everybody's finding their place. Fight, 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 fight. And no one accepts being the beta. Everyone wants to be alpha. Beta is what we get to by default. And then when you're beta in the world, then all of us know what it means to be beta, lower class, not being served but having to serve. You're never saying to yourself, here, I'm going to serve you out of gratitude. I'm going to serve you till I figure out how to steal the crown. Isn't that right? Can you see it?
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
No one thinks to themselves, how many of you ever lost a fight with somebody and then thought to yourself, well, that's the end of that. I'm never going to think about it again. We don't do that. Our minds are plotting all the time. Even when we yield in a relationship to someone, we yield, but we yield. We're sneaking around the backside trying to figure out how we're going to get what we just yielded to. And that's part of this nature that believes it knows what freedom is, and that's freedom through domination. And there is no freedom through domination. There's freedom only through illumination. And it's the task of illumination that we're after. It's the task of understanding what it means that gradually lets us enter into a world in which we're no longer combatants, but we become participants. And the participation with God's life, with the moment, with the living now, participation with that is freedom, because everything is given to us through that relationship. Now let's take a deep breath because we have to move on. We're talking about what it means to be an individual who, and how many of you heard this idea, you know, that you have to shake off the illusions of this world if you want to wake up. You've heard that idea, haven't you? The problem with the world and the things that we wind up presently serving has nothing to do with the things in it. And it has nothing to do really with the illusion that these things give us. The illusion of, if I have power, I'll be someone. The problem, that which we presently are indentured to, is something that we'll just call attachment. It is attachments that is our present ruler that we serve. Not the things, not the ideas, but our attachment to these things for what we derive from them when we think about them. If I think about a lot of money, if I think about a power by which no one is ever going to argue with me again, how many of you would like that power, by the way? Wherever I go, all see me as being someone who, if you argue, you will be fried to a crisp, you'll turn to a pile of ashes, and that's the end of you. Come on, admit it. I want people to see me as great, not to look at me and ask me to do something. That idea, when we have it, oh man. Yeah, you know, I can't, you come on, you go ahead and think about it. Whatever it is that you think is going to give you freedom, power. Oh yeah. And then because of the way in which the culturally conditioned mind is filled with these images and ideas, this train, like a train, a big long train, all first class cabins, runs by all these associations of all the things I need and will have when this first it is a locomotive too. When this first locomotive. Good. I love those words. When this locomotive gets hold of us, the next thing you know, we're filled with the steam, the power of this great engine by which we're sure everything's going to work out. But have you noticed that it gets derailed? Have you noticed that not everyone recognizes the mighty train of yourself? And what happens in moments like that is that what we were identified with, what we were attached to, suddenly all starts to come undone, and we get stressed and angry and frightened. Why? Because the me that I had derived from the image, the sense of myself that was connected to the idea of what I was going to have and be, gets rocked to its core. And there I am. And all that happened was that the price of coffee went from $3.99 to $4. And I mean, it can be the simplest thing in the world, but you've placed a bet somewhere on something, and because the bet falls through, the ground opens up and you fall through it. Why? My sense of self has been stolen from me. But the sense of self was a derivative. And no derivative sense of self can ever be free, because by the fact that it's borrowed, by being attached to an image or something like that, means that every time the world changes, so is the very ground of this thing that I call my contentment going to start shaking and fall away. Now, yes or no, you see this? You see this? It's a fact. So the question has to be begged, what is it in us? What kind of nature agrees to compromising itself? Because can you not see that's a compromise? If I identify with something that as soon as it changes causes me to become indentured, puts me in prison, what kind of self agrees to waking up in the morning, say, today I'm going to identify with something that by the end of the day is going to cause me a lot of pain? What nature does that? A nature asleep to itself. A nature that is unconscious to its own actions. And it is this nature that's unconscious to its own actions that we have to begin to question. Because if it's unconscious to its own acts, then how can I, as long as I remain, now listen, because this is important, I remain in servitude to that nature. How long can that stay in place? If, and do you see it? Do you see that, have you ever been, how do I say this? Have you ever been afraid of anything? Can there be fear without the idea of loss? Cannot be. And if there can't be fear without the idea of loss, and I'm not talking about even walking out into the traffic, you know, walking out in the freeway, you say, I'm afraid of that. That's not connected to loss. Oh, yes, it is. Goodbye. Fear connected to loss. Can there be a sense of fear of loss without you trying to protect something? In other words, if I fear something, I'm always going to try to protect it. Yes or no? Try to protect it. Try to protect it. Have you ever been compelled to try to protect something? Are you serving? What are you serving then? If you see the lineage I described, you're serving fear, aren't you? Every time you rise up and you try to protect an image of something that you have, something, what are you serving? And see, that's what you say. I'm not serving anything. It was serving me. But do you see what happened? The idea that we were connected to that was going to free us, we become the servant of. You can see it, and you must examine it, because I have to keep going with the talk. So it begs the question. Look, it's rough. I'm the first one to admit it. Who we take ourselves to be is not interested in being unmasked. I walk into a room, you walk into a room, and whether we see it or not, we carry an attitude. We carry our bodies in a certain way. We even carry certain things with us. Everything is part of a way in which we're trying to present ourselves. And we're taught by the world that part of being a proper, wise, strong human being is to always present yourself in a certain light. I mean, that you dress for success. You've heard these things. Now, I'm not denigrating the idea of complying with cultural mandates in order to achieve what one wants to along a certain path. I'm just saying that if I do that and I fear not doing it, I'm the servant of it, not the one who's using it to get free. And this is an important distinction to make, because what we're looking at here is, where is it in us that we are the servants of our own unconsciousness? And the reason it's an important question, and I'm asking you to look at from the top of the talk, is I said that the first principle of freedom is that whatever I understand, in essence, serves me, and what I don't understand, I am the servant of. Now, are there examples in life? Because what we're interested in is, how is it that you and I are going to change this relationship with the unconscious parts of ourselves that we serve? How many of you like hating something? Sounds stupid, doesn't it? Although there obviously is something in us that does like it. You got to see it. Because if I didn't like it, why would I do it? Something in me tells me it's mandatory. Well, if something tells me it's mandatory, then it must think that it's essential. And if it's essential, it likes it. So how many of you ever felt this kind of conflict in yourself? You're feeling hatred for something and you're going, you ought not feel that way, you ought not feel that way, you ought not feel that way. So here's a human being fully divided. I'm feeling the anger and the hatred, and something's saying, I ought not feel that way, I ought not feel that way. And I'm like a rocket that's tethered to the ground and lit. Because I'm, you know, something's trying to explode and something's saying, no, you can't explode. And this is a fully divided human being. Now, important question. The part of me that's saying, I ought not feel like that, I ought not feel like that, is it something that was there prior to the hatred and anger? Or did the hatred and anger awaken in me that thought that now condemns me for the very existence of this conflicted state? And the answer is, that ought not be there, wasn't there until the anger was there. So even that part of it that says, I ought not be like that, and judges ourselves. And have you ever got mad at yourself for being mad? Gee, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That proves I'm really a decent person. I hate myself for the hatred I feel. It doesn't prove that. It proves that we are serving something unseen in ourselves. How do we change the relationship so that rather than serving what we don't understand and acts on us, we can begin to understand these things and they can begin to serve ourselves in a true way, which is to put ourselves in a broader relationship with life. Got the question? I've set the table for us. Okay, take a deep breath. I love birds. You go, what? What has that got to do with anything? Any of you have bird feeders listening to this? If you ever watch birds, and I do, where I live in Southern Oregon, I have a very small little house that I sit in all the time, and I have a big window, and right outside the window, much to my wife's chagrin, there is a series of very unsightly bird feeders. They're just hanging everywhere. And on any given morning, I'm not exaggerating, especially in springtime when the juncos and the nuthatches, when all of them, the mating thing starts. God, I can have 150 birds on the ground and in the feeders. I'm not exaggerating, 150. And I love watching them because they're always teaching. And one of the things that I've learned from watching them that connects intimately with how we can understand and eventually have serve us these dark parts, these unconscious parts, is that these birds come and go in waves.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit guyfinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit guyfinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Now, if you haven't never watched birds, one day you'll see it. They come and go in waves. You'll be sitting there in the morning and maybe nobody's come. And the first four juncos will come and they're popping around in the trees. And you know as soon as you see the first five juncos that there's 50 behind them. And that's just what happened. First five, then 10, then 20. And then all of a sudden the ground actually looks like it's crawling. It actually looks like the ground is moving. There's so many creatures running around out there. And they're out there and they're having a bang-up time. All the birds walking around, wave after wave, all there. And then I happen to have a few Cooper's hawks that live in where I live also. Now, the Cooper hawks think that my bird feeding station is actually a delicatessen. They do. They know that there are always going to be a lot of birds there. So once a week, one of these Cooper hawks will either be up in the air or be approaching. Now, sometimes they're not. You just hear the whee, you hear the call of the Cooper hawk. Now, here's the point. All the birds on the ground, dancing, 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 eating, 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 good time, good time. And then, all of a sudden, the first wave leaves. The first 20 birds. And you actually hear it like that. And as soon as the first 20 leave, 40 leave in the next wave. And when the 40 leave in that wave, then the remainder of the birds, like that. Now, they come in waves and they leave in waves. Now, I'm going to hold the point for a second. Is there something inside of each one of those little birds that thinks to itself, now is a good time for me to leave in this wave? Or do these birds, because of nature's life and instinct to preserve itself, are they connected to a broader consciousness, if you will, than their individual life, so that as soon as there's any impetus that's carried out by what would be in bird life, you know, the alert bird, I'm using that word only as a certain, that as soon as that one leaves, there's no choice. The rest of the birds aren't going to sit and go, okay, I'm going to stay. They go, and they have no choice but to serve the wave that they came in and the wave that takes them away. Do you understand the point? It is the wave that moves them, not an individual. Clear enough? Now, back to the bird feeding. All the birds are gone, but as a rule, there will always be one or two juncos left. And they just keep feeding. They don't serve the wave the same way that the masses of the birds do. And I'm fascinated by that because I know from my own interior work that the evolution of the species, even at the level of nature, depends upon mutation in the species. And that the relative freedom of a creature will never be something granted to it by the masses of the creatures that serve the broader body of the preservation of the whole of that species. But the whole of that species can't go on without that one bird when the wave comes through it, because you know it feels the wave. You know that one bird. It's not apart from the mass of the waves of the bird. You know that little bird feels that tug. But there's something in it. There's another quality, whatever we'll call that, that's in that little bird. So when the wave comes to take it away, if you will, something in it chooses to remain and feed. Now, is it at risk, greater risk? Yeah. But isn't it also feeding longer than the rest did? Isn't it also able to do things independent of a species, even though it's part of that species? Yes. So risk-reward enters into the situation in nature, and that's how nature changes itself, by certain creatures who, for whatever reason, in their genetic quality, because this is all quite mechanical at the level of nature, that they become willing to not be a part of the wave of the life of their species. How many of you understand this principle? Because it's pretty important what I'm trying to convey. All right. That moment in which that creature doesn't do that, would you understand then that the next time the wave comes, it's less likely to go with the wave because it has withstood the wave in itself the first time? Yes? So that each subsequent time it isn't moved with the wave, it has greater... Please listen to this. Each subsequent time it doesn't move with the wave, is it freer or more a captive? It's freer. See, it's relative freedom. The bird's free. Can you think of anything freer than a bird? And yet the bird must serve the instinctual preservation aspect of it that moves in these waves, that has to go with all the other birds. But inherent right in freedom, and this is an idea, and I'm not going to have time to explore it, but I want you to do it later. Did you know that, unfortunately, because of the way our minds work, we don't know that beauty and freedom and kindness and silence, we don't know that these eternal qualities are as deep as they are timeless. The depth of freedom. The depth of freedom. Not something we think about, because we don't have something presently in us emotionally that's capable of responding to the whole idea that freedom has depth to it. We have an inherent understanding because of one relationship that's possible for human beings having to do with either art, because we can understand the depth of art, the depth of music. We can understand the depth of love because when we fall in love with a human being, it is inherent in us at first to want to plumb the depths of the individual, because in plumbing the depths of another individual, we discover the depths of our own nature. So there's an inherent wish to plumb the depths of life inside of us, but we live from a nature how successful have you been at trying to get one of those rubber dinghies to get it underwater? You can't get a rubber dinghy underwater. No offense, I'm not calling you a rubber dinghy, but you can't get that inflated image to go anything other than just on the surface of things. So when we talk about freedom and we talk about this bird, this first little junco or this nuthatch, which is probably better for the talk, this little nuthatch. How many of you are nuthatches? Raise your hands. You're all nuthatches. I want you to know it. You're nuthatches. Don't let anybody tell you differently. This first little impetus that we have, where I can see that, you know, and now I'll get right to the main point, that we live in waves, don't we? How about waves just at the broadest level? How about waves of national fear by which you're sold everything that you need to swallow so that you lose your freedom? How about waves of economic fear? See, and these are the broad things. Are you telling me that you haven't heard certain news and run around? How many of you know who Chicken Little was? You say, I don't like all these images that you're using, Nuthatch Chicken Little. It's foul. What about waves of anger? Waves of stress? Waves of resentment, waves of worry, waves of doubt, waves of comparison. In case it's not clear what I've been trying to help our minds gather around, we're talking about the fact that within us is a nature that at a psychological level is identical to that instinctual nature in animals, where because certain events take place, the Cooper's hawk of a bad event, of a future fear, it flies in, and everything in us, that wave passes through us. And when the wave passes through us, what do? We go with it, don't we? Here comes the wave of depression. And where does the wave of depression come? Here comes the Cooper's hawk of a regret or a loss. Wave comes in all of a sudden. Here comes the image. Here comes the thought. Off I go, flying away. And when I fly away from something that I fear or that I resist, am I in charge because I understand the moment, or am I serving that thing that causes me to fly away? Which is it? And the answer is evident. I am serving what I don't understand. Not having what I understand serve the possibility of growth, of development, of wisdom. All right, now, the question then, if we're all on the same track, is how do we work with this idea? Because what have we talked about? We've talked about the fact that as human beings, just like creatures who serve the waves having to do with preservational instincts, we have parts inside of us that fly away on these waves of negative states. Or, you know, I don't know if you ever noticed this, and this is what we call the greatest moment of our life. How many of you are waiting for a jubilant wave? Because that's part of it, isn't it? I'm so sick of the bad waves. When's the good wave coming? But have you never noticed that when you ride a jubilant wave, you invariably ride up on the rocks? Because what goes up goes down. It's classic. So we're not talking about living in waves at all anymore. We're talking about the ocean, if you want to use a metaphor. Not being the waves. The waves are beautiful in and of themselves. They serve the ocean. Did you know that the waves serve the ocean? They clean it, they oxygenate it, they stir it. But imagine the ocean sitting there, and here comes a wave, and it's filled with algae, or it's got some kind of flotsam and jetsam, and it continues to not only judge itself by what the wave's carrying, but then it tries to figure out how to have a better wave.
Here, Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks 4 times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
So here's a story. Take a deep breath. Help explain what we're doing. Because, in essence, what we're interested here is how can we as individuals begin to recognize the difference between a wave and our essential self. Long time ago, Manifest Destiny, pioneers moving west in the United States. And here comes a settler and his family. And this is a decent man, decent family, and he finds a beautiful place to homestead. It's on a slight knoll. And he builds down at sort of the base of the knoll, and there's a beautiful perennial stream, almost river, running right through it in fertile valleys. Some trees, rocks, got to do work, got to clean the place up. But there he is, and he spends 11 months working hard right through the seasons getting his homestead in place. Remember now, you are all things in these stories. Hard, hard work. 11 and a half months, and they're getting ready to celebrate their first year. And in the distance, he hears and I wish I was sitting at a desk like I do when I talk in Ojai, because I make sound effects. He hears a rumbling, a distant rumbling sound. And as he hears the distant rumbling sound, the rumbling grows and looks out. And here comes the first, he doesn't know exactly what it is, and he knows what buffalo are. Here come the first like 15 or 20 buffalo, and they're running right down that fertile valley area along that stream looking for a place to cross because the river widens out and narrows where his place is. 15 or 20 buffalo. Hey, honey, kids, come on. Come see the buffalo. You'll get why this is funny later. I know the story, so it's funny now. Come see the buffalo. Oh, look, honey, buffalo. But now here comes another wave. And this time it's not 20 buffalo. It's about 50 or 60 buffalo behind the 20 buffalo. And now he looks out and he can hear the rumbling getting louder. And he sees a cloud of dust the size of Montana in the background. And suddenly he realizes this isn't a wave of 20 or 50 or 100 buffalo, but there must be 10,000 buffalo. And they're all coming right where my home is. Honey, kids, get in the house. And everybody scrambles back in the house and they pull the wood shutters and they're peeking out. And here comes buffalo as far as the eye can see. And they're knocking down the fences that he built and they're running over the places that he planted his beans and his corn and stuff like that. And he's getting there. He's sitting there looking at the holding on the shutters. He says, oh, that's it. And he goes out running after the buffalo with his gun. Bang, bang, trying to chase the buffalo off of his property. And of course, he no more gets out there in the herd of buffalo than another wave comes along, captures him, and he gets trampled. It's a happy story. So. Well, let me ask you, have you ever been trampled by a wave of negative thoughts and feelings? Mauled. And so the buffalo leave, and he's laying on the ground sort of in a crumpled mess. And he looks over, and there's an old-timer standing on another knoll, and the old-timer's just sitting there shaking his head like this, just shaking his head. Well, he picks himself up because he's a man of character, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. You start over. If you don't start over, you'll never know what stands in your way. And he says, goes up there, he picks himself up. He's not badly injured. It's a happy story. And all right, sweetheart, I guess, you know what? It was just bad fortune. And they spend the next 11 months building the fences up and plotting the ground and doing everything they're doing. And 11 and a half months goes by, and all of a sudden there's a rumble in the distance. And here comes the first wave of buffalo. And here comes the next. And he's thinking to himself, I'm not going to go out there and get trampled. I'm not an idiot. And 2 seconds later, he's out there with his guns trying to bang, 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 bang. And he gets trampled again. And he's laying on the ground in a wreck and a mess. And he looks over. There's an old timer standing on the distant hill shaking his head. Well, because I don't have as much time as I want to finish this story, he goes over to the old timer. He says, you know, you could have helped me. You stand there and shake your head. Old timer says, yep. And the young man says, well, that's not much of an answer. Yep. He says, well, why are you shaking your head? If you're not going to help me, why are you shaking your head? And the old timer says, well, sonny, the problem you have isn't that the buffalo come and go each year, because they're on their way to summer grasslands. They've been taking that same route for nearly 1,000 years, I reckon. And the young fellow says, well, if that's not the problem, then what is, old timer? He says, the problem is that each year you become a part of the herd. I'll give you a minute to think about it. Each time you attempt to stop the herd, you become a part of the herd. And then the young pioneer says, well, then what's the answer, old timer? Because he's mad that the fellow's pointed out that's obvious. You don't get trampled unless you get caught in a wave, do you? What's the answer to an old timer? And the old timer says, well, sonny, either you move your homestead to a higher ground, or you understand that these creatures are coming through because that's the nature of the world you're in, and you let them go, and then you do what you have to do after they've gone. But either way, and here's the point of the talk, either way, the idea of learning to let go, not running with the wave, is the same exact thing as choosing the higher ground. And that's what this talk is about, is choosing the higher ground. We've talked about the higher ground. Now, to choose the higher ground requires understanding what it is that removes us from our natural right to stand on the higher ground. And this is an important idea. I wish I had, again, a little more time to stress this. You see, is there anyone here who is instantaneously free of those waves? No! To be a human being is to be this unique creature, unlike any other, in which not only are these waves of nature present in their dark force, but simultaneously existing in that same human being is that light that can understand these forces and through them, by using them, continue in the evolution of his or her relationship with that light that reveals these principles for being what they are. Oh, what I've just said to you. Here is where it is possible for an individual to choose the upward path. Because the downward path is the path of being attached to and identifying with all things that cause you to run with waves and in waves. The higher ground is understanding that right now while I'm talking to you, and in fact I'm doing it while I'm talking to you, the higher ground is to start recognizing that at all times the buffalo roam. Don't they? Look, here's what you say. I don't see any buffalo. Every once in a while I feel like Kramer on Seinfeld. I don't see any buffalo. The young man didn't see any buffalo either, but did that mean that their migratory rate route didn't take them through his property. Do you understand? Being a human being is a window of the universe. And everything passes through us. And it's beautiful. The buffalo are beautiful. They're not beautiful when we're attached to and identified with things that we run out and try to stop them from running through. Then we get trampled. But if we can use them properly, meaning in this understand place, choose the higher ground, what happens to us? Here's the tug. Ever felt the tug of wanting to worry about something? Well, what happens if instead of going along with the tug, you let it go through you? What happens to that wave when it moves through you instead of becoming you, you becoming it? I'll tell you what happens. You realize that it's okay. That everything, and this is the truth, but you'll never know this. This is what I meant. This is the risk side. See, the little bird, go back to the bird. Little bird isn't thinking to itself as we can. Here's a mechanical urge in me to get even with somebody. I want to let them have it. I can feel the wave and it's mounting. But I've ridden that wave. And not only does it hurt the person, but it hurts me and I gain nothing except for more certainty that it's right to live like that, which I know it's not. So instead of riding the wave, I choose the higher ground. And the wave comes. How many of you have ever been on a boat? Everybody here been on a boat. Were you ever on a boat and the boat started rocking? Yes or no? Of course. You're on a boat. Boat rocks. Why does the boat rock? Waves. When the waves rock the boat, do you say, I'm a boat? I'm feeling the rocking. You don't say to yourself, I'm a boat. Because you recognize that the feeling of rocking is produced by waves. And you are not the boat that's rocking. You are experiencing the rocking of the boat that's produced by waves. But here comes a wave of life. Here comes someone that says something that makes you angry. Here comes a moment that looks like it's going to take something from you. And it's just a wave. The reason the wave has strength is because it strikes what I'm identified with. It strikes the Titanic in me, if you want to use words. It strikes the boat by which I say I'm a boat. I'm a luxury liner. Or I'm going to be one, whatever it is. And here comes the wave. Boat starts rocking. Oh my God. Oh my God. Protect the boat. Can you protect a boat from waves? The only way you can do is take it out of the water. We're not going to do that. We're going to start to understand what it means, little by little by little, to recognize what it means to use the waves to waken up. To use the waves to waken up. I can't say it properly. To use the waves to wake up. Use the waves to wake up. Use them as a tool for freedom because you understand them instead of letting them use you as a tool to serve those unconscious forces. The risk will be when the wave comes, am I willing to take the higher ground or am I going to run out into the herd of those bitter thoughts and feelings and get trampled by them? And the more you see that you get trampled by those waves, the more willing you're going to be to risk losing what, I might ask. All the waves do is threaten you with loss. You run with them, you get trampled. Risk it. Use the waves to come awake. Do it all day long today and for the rest of your life because by the grace of God, there's no end to the waves and there's no end to the higher ground.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit guyfinley.com where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polanski of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's GUYFINLEY.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.